Now, here's a preview of Powerful Women Revealed.
Good afternoon, and welcome to WATD's Powerful Women Revealed, created and hosted by Nicole Perry. You're invited to enjoy an ongoing series of personal and educational discussions with a variety of women that want to educate, inspire, and bring awareness to the community. These women all have a powerful mission and appreciate the opportunity to share their stories, milestones, and successes with you. Here's your host, Nicole Perry.
Good afternoon and welcome to Powerful Women Revealed. I'm your host, Nicole Perry, and my guest today is a graduate of Scituate High School and the University of Miami. She is a well-traveled woman that has lived in numerous places throughout the United States and abroad. She walked into a newsroom for the first time when she was just 35 years young and knew immediately that that was where she was meant to be. She never looked back and spent the next 30 plus years in journalism. The highlight of her career was spending 28 years as the editor of the Hingham Journal and the Cohasset Mariner. I am so proud and delighted to introduce you to my personal book editor, Mary Ford. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here.
I have goosebumps on my entire body right now. I am so thrilled to have you here, and I'm so excited to introduce everybody to you.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, and welcome to Team Power Brand. Braintree.
Yes, I love it.
And we'll be welcoming you at our next meeting with a little, I give everybody like a little gift.
Oh, nice.
You know, that joins the team. So if you want to come hang out with Mary and I at our Braintree meeting, it's coming up. We have one every month. So check us out. And you are listed in the directory. So if people want to find you, you're in the Braintree directory. But I want to start this first segment first talking about a little bit of your background and also why grammar matters. So you've lived in a ton of places. Oh my goodness. I was reading the information about you. I'm like, oh my God. So are you from Massachusetts or California?
I'm from Massachusetts. So it's kind of funny because I've been back in Massachusetts since 1987. Okay. So for many years, I've been here. Yeah. But what happened was I grew up in Scituate on Gannett Road, and I followed my older sister to the University of Miami because I had no idea what I wanted to do or where I wanted to go. And then when I finished, I thought, you know, it's going to be very, how can I go back to Scituate? I've been to Miami for 4 years, and it was glamorous and fun. I always had a tan.
Always had a tan.
So my early goal, believe it or not, and this will really date me, was I wanted to be an airline stewardess. And in those days, the average career of an airline stewardess was about 18 months. So it was, you had to be young and attractive and a certain
and
weight.
And skinny.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether they didn't like me or they weren't hiring or whatever, but I couldn't follow that path. I went
you were
to a
probably
lot of interviews.
You were too witty.
I was too witty. I was too smart.
You outsmarted them.
So anyway, when I got back to Boston, I noticed that they were hiring teachers. I got the Boston Globe, and they were hiring teachers in Los Angeles. And I had graduated with an education degree. And so I applied. And then I found out later, once I got the job, the reason they were hiring out of state was in those days, and it may still be true today, you had to have a five-year degree to teach in California. And so they were hiring teachers from out of state because we only had four-year degrees and we were cheaper.
Oh.
So I went to California. I had bought my Volkswagen.
Oh.
And I drove. My mom helped me pack, and she put a sign, California, here she comes.
Aww.
And off I went.
How cute. And like peace signs and stickers all over your...
And what happened was I had researched a place to live, and they had these apartment buildings called the South Bay Clubs, and they were for singles only. So I thought it would be like college. There would be a lot of young people. But what single meant in California, and it still means it to this day, just means unmarried at that time. So I met people that had been married seven times. You know, they were older or whatever.
God.
But anyway, my husband, I met him. He had moved into the South Bay Club, and he had been transferred from his job. He had been working in Alabama and was there. So that's how we met.
Nice. Now, what about living in Japan or France or England? Like, real quick, can you give me a snippet?
Yes. Well, what happened was through my husband's work. So we got married after we knew each other for about a year. And then with his job, with the old AT&T Western Electric, we were transferred with his different projects.
Okay.
So we started out, we lived in Los Angeles for a year, then we went to Japan, and then from Japan we went right to France, and then from France we went to Missouri we went to Minnesota to England back to Minnesota, then Minnesota to Illinois, and then Massachusetts.
Wow, so like about a year in each place?
No, some of it was 2.5, 3 years. We were 2.5 in Japan, 2.5 in France and England. The projects lasted about that long.
So,
but it was a great way to be young and travel. It was a blast.
I'm sure. Now, you were at the newspaper for many years.
Yes. So how did I get there?
Well, how did you get there? But really, was it because now you're semi-retired and you're starting your own business? So how, how did you get there? And how easy was it to sort of transition now?
Well, it's interesting. It's been a difficult transition after leaving a long career that I loved. So being editor of the Hingham Journal and Cohasset Mariner was the highlight of my working life, definitely.
Yeah.
What could be more fun than being the editor of a local newspaper? Never mind two.
I don't know if it would be fun for me.
But you feel
but the stress.
It was a lot of stress and a lot of long hours.
Like, that's
so
all
it was
I'm thinking.
Time for me to step aside after so many years. But it was wonderful. My readers, my contributors, all the reporters I had over the years, the stories that we did. It's a wonderful occupation because you are accountable. You do something. I always felt like I was doing something that really mattered.
Yeah.
I was doing something to inform the people in the community about issues.
And locally.
People locally.
Mm.
But it was interesting. So when I walked into my first newsroom, we were living in Illinois, and it was the Daily Herald, which was a daily like the Patriot Ledger.
Mm.
And I had graduated as a teacher, and I had started out teaching in California. And then with my husband's job, when we were in the States, I would substitute. And to me, and I know there's a lot of great substitutes out there, but for me, that especially secondary, that's like a really hard job because people make fun of you, or like the name Ford in Minnesota is very unusual.
Oh.
And the fact that I drove an Oldsmobile would set them off for the rest of the day. So so I entered an ad, and I went down, and when I walked into the newsroom, the thing I'll never forget was how messy it was.
Mm.
And being the messy person in my family, I sort of have an inferiority complex that my sisters and my mother have given me over the years, but I knew I fit right in on that basis alone. I mean, papers were stacked. Notebooks were everywhere.
So you felt like you
were
at
dusty.
Home.
I felt like I was home. And I knew people wouldn't care if I had a little dust.
So it wasn't a Marie Kondo kind of feeling where you just wanted to get rid of the mess.
Felt part of it.
You felt part of it. Oh my God, what a riot.
And if anyone had ever been to my Hingham Journal office over the years, it was very much that way. We had a lot of, and the fire department always kind of looked the other way, like, why are you saving all these old papers?
But okay, so now you now have your own editing business.
Yes.
Why does editing and grammar matter? Because it's a misconception with all the texting that we're doing these days.
Exactly. I think that with the texting, we have to adjust. Obviously, texting and emailing and blogging, all the different ways people communicate, people are forgiving all of those mistakes. And even some emails I've noticed, especially maybe from other fields, but I've noticed with realtors especially, they'll put down, please forgive any typos you see. I'm typing this on my phone or something. Okay, well, I get it. And they're just trying to get information
quickly
out and quickly.
Yeah,
and
everybody,
that's fine.
Everybody's waiting. Everybody's waiting for everything. And everybody wants everything right now.
But when you get a really nice thank you note that comes in the mail, or you read something that's well written, you know it. And it's really nice. And I think that that part is still important, that you want to look good in print.
I agree.
Want people to understand you, writing clearly and concisely, and trying to keep the errors to a minimum, I think is a really good thing.
I do, too.
And so I'm hoping to use the skills that I've acquired and honed all these years to keep that going. And I can do a lot of that remotely. So
of course.
It's kind of fun.
And you won't be able to help it. Of course, it's going to filter in. This is what your 30 years background is. Now, what do you mean when we say we should use good English?
Well, we should write English well. And I remember one... when I was on when I was a Norwell Mariner reporter way back, a teacher there at the Norwell Middle School said that the students' ears were out of tune, which I always kind of remembered, meaning that they're not hearing English spoken well, never mind seeing it written well.
Oh.
So the way people speak then can kind of reflect. But that doesn't mean we should abandon our language. It's one of the most wonderful languages there is, and we ought to try and use it the way it was intended.
The
speak
way it
correctly.
Was in, yes, intended.
And
all
clearly,
right.
Yes.
Well, we have to go to break already.
I can't believe it.
When we come back, I want you to really explain a little bit more about how a mistake in grammar can possibly be truly embarrassing or hurt you in the long run. So hope you stay with us. I'm your host, Nicole Perry. My guest is Mary Ford, and you can go to maryfordedit.com. You're listening to Powerful Women Revealed right here on 95.9 WATD.
Hi, I'm Nicole Perry, and I am so excited to tell you that my debut book will be published soon. My book is entitled I Am on a Love Diet, and it's practically an experiment. I share with my readers many confessions and revelations throughout because a grapefruit diet is just not realistic anymore. You can get a free copy of Chapter 1 right now and be one of the first to get your hands on a copy. A love diet is personal. Start your love diet today and visit powerfulwomenrevealed.com.
On a long and lonesome highway, east of Omaha, you can listen to the engine moaning out his one note song. You can think about the woman or the girl you knew the night before. But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do when you're riding 16 hours and there's nothing much to do. And you don't feel much like riding, you just wish the trip was through. See, here I am on the road again. There I am up on the stage. Here I go playing star again. There I go. Turn the page.
And we are back. You're listening to Powerful Women Revealed. I love that song. And I actually was replacing the word when you're riding 16 hours to writing 16 hours. And... And you just wish the trip was through. I've been writing my book for 2.5 years. So it's I'm persevering and I'm doing great. And I technically just have a little snippet left to write. And then I will start the process of uploading and self-publishing. But it's a long process. So back to right before we went to break, what is a mistake? So you said you have an example of something that you did that was really embarrassing.
Well, in being in the newspaper business, there was never perfection. And when you get the paper, and we were weeklies, you would see the mistake, of course, after it came out in print.
Yes.
But you always had another paper the next week, not to necessarily correct something embarrassing unless it was a mistake in fact or whatever, but to recover from it. So one of the first, when I became editor of the Hingham Journal, the Rotary was doing a... a fundraiser for prostate cancer. And in the headline, we said prostrate. And of course, that means to recline or lie down. So I heard from every member of the Hingham Rotary Club that we had made this typo in the headline.
Oh,
and it was pretty embarrassing.
My God. Yeah, you know what I did on my website? I put, you can get a chapter sneak peek at chapter one, and I did P-E-A-K.
Yes, and that's one of the, it's funny, I was Googling most embarrassing
and thought,
mistakes, and
oh,
that was one of them.
And that's
the
one of them.
Yes.
So I'm normal. So
normal.
I'm quite normal. I just need to have my editor look at all my things and not just put it out there.
And sometimes it's typos, like another funny typo that could have ended up on way back on the Jay Leno show, and everybody in Cohasset had it in their drawer. The town was collecting a nominal fee for, I can't even remember what it was for, but in the paper we had a nominal feel instead of fee.
Oh my God.
So that was actually kind of fun to have that mistake.
What a riot.
But it was a typo. It wasn't a grammatical mistake, but it's nice to have another set of eyes. I'm really good at spotting typos in other people's work.
In other people's work. So really, this next segment is really about the importance of clarity in writing. So can you give a good example of who isn't being clear when they're writing? Is it?
Well, I think it's kind of almost a universal condition today that people aren't being clear when they write. It's a lot of small sentence fragments.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people do, and it's something that I think that my background in journalism will hold me in good stead for my business, is that I know what's important and I know what makes a story.
Mm.
So if I get something and someone is just kind of beating around the bush or off on tangents,
you can spot it.
I can spot that and I can help them zone in, especially with college essays and things like that. I've been doing some college essays editing, and I noticed that some of the kids, because it says 500 words, that number 500,
they're just filling
they're
it
done.
In. Oh
and
my
so
gosh.
And so I said, well, what happened when you were sitting in the doctor's office and you fainted after that? What happened? Tell us more.
So they're just trying to...
They're filling in the gaps or whatever. So it's just guiding them on that and helping people come up with a good story from a good point of view as well. It doesn't always have to be an I story. I know one of my sons, his college essay, he used to skate all the time. He was a hockey enthusiast. So his essay was written from the point of view of his hockey skates.
Oh, that is interesting.
How worn and how tired and the whole bit and wet and smelly. And it was really good. And so it turned out it helped
rough
him a
around
lot.
The edges.
Yeah. But it wasn't done from him, the first person. So it told his story through an inanimate object.
So now really it's the high school students that you would love to support
and help
because they're writing, so like seniors that are writing essays to get into colleges. But are you also wanting to work with college students that have ongoing essays to write?
Yes, any of that, and adults and businesses as well. I'm open to really anything. I find editing fun. I really do. I think it's a fun... it's like doing a math problem when I was terrible at math, but I can find mistakes or help people
make something
clearer.
Yeah, I can imagine that
help
it would
them shine.
Be fun to look at someone else's work, but there's such a fine line. You have to be careful of, you know, but you're very respectful.
Exactly. You, and we all had English teachers that scared us at one point or another, including me. And I don't own a red pencil, so I'm not going to be embarrassing anyone or saying that you're stupid, you should know better. And we actually had a couple of people in Hingham that would read the paper every week and come up with their red pencils and try to and give me a little bit of a lesson on different, and sometimes I tried to learn from it.
Well,
especially acronyms, and we got into the acronym, the alphabet soup type thing for a while, and that was a really good point when this lady came up and circled all the acronyms we used in the paper and how confusing that was.
Oh.
Especially when you have a something that's kind of wordy.
Yeah.
So how do you do it on the next reference? And so we tend to then put everything, and it's in an acronym. And there's really only a few acronyms you should use, like FBI,
yes.
CIA, that are generally known by everyone.
OMG.
And then try to avoid.
OMG, yeah. LOL. Yeah, not all.
I don't know if those are acronyms as much as they are kind of just like
yes,
tweets or sayings.
Yes. But. Well, now there's editing, mm-hmm. and then there's being an expert on the subject matter, and you are both. You have
Correct.
Both capabilities.
Yes, I was always very good at news judgment. So even if there's a feature story, I used to always say to my reporters and my contributors that you have to find out what the story is. It's not just telling someone's life.
And how important is the structure?
Well, it depends. Some of it is, I'm someone that would, I like to see a writer emerge and develop their own style. Everyone tells a story in a certain way. However, if it takes you too long to get to the point, no one is going to read it, especially today.
So how do you guide your clients if they're not having that clarity? How do you guide them in a respectful way?
Well, you have to talk to them and say, really, what is the message that you want to deliver?
So you ask
questions.
And let's
focus on that, yes.
So the questions really get to the heart of the matter.
Yes.
Very interesting.
But I can definitely help on that level. And a lot of people get very redundant or get overly formal, and you can get rid of a lot of that.
Oh, I'm writing that down.
Overly formal. Repeating themselves over and over. Well, and it's funny because we're not in a very formal society, but if someone actually tries to write something, sometimes it's like, wow.
You don't need to be that.
They get the thesaurus out and they're filling all of these things in.
Well, I find myself repeating words.
That's called echoing. And you should try
and I replace
that.
It. Oh, I do right away. As soon as I see it, I
it's very easy to do.
To fix.
Yes.
It's very
but
easy
But it's
to
easy
fix.
For people to do that. They fall into it.
And you can also help people or business people with press releases, announcements. Is your copy editing service as far as, is that to help people with their website or?
Well, it's more of the print, but I could certainly do the website as well. Mm. Anything that's written. And the copy editing is basically fixing those mistakes that people tend to make. You're putting periods or commas in the wrong place, semicolons, colons.
And so we have to go to break. But when we come back, I want to talk real quick because you're writing your own book.
Yes.
So
it's exciting.
I know. I'm always excited whenever I talk to somebody that's writing a book as well. So my guest is Mary Ford. You can go to maryfordedit.com. You can also go to Powerful Women Revealed into the Braintree directory, and her information is there as well. I hope you stay with us. You're listening to Powerful Women Revealed right here on 95.9 WATD.
Hi, I'm Nicole Perry. My mission has always been to support women, and I'm still doing that through my radio show, Powerful Women Revealed. Now I'm creating additional opportunities for women to come together. We focus on personal balance, fine-tuning our business models, and preparing for our futures. Give yourself the gift of personal and professional fulfillment. Check out our new membership levels at powerfulwomenrevealed.com.
Get away. I need space. I told you yesterday. Slow the pace down, then I see your face. Can we do that tomorrow?
Can we do that tomorrow?
'Cause now you're moving in on my skin. I move back with my lips. It goes against my better judgment. 'Cause I want it. And I'm gonna be cliche for a minute and tell you that I've been hurt before. So I think I'm gonna need another minute to not hurt no more. 'Cause all I do is jump right into your arms. Every time I see you, I just wrap myself around you. Jump into something real. Even though I'm cautious, I just like the way it feels when it's us. Baby, when it's us, you make me forget that I'm not ready for love.
And we are back. You're listening to Powerful Women Revealed. I just want to say that was Julia Michaels with Jump. Such a great song. And you really got to jump right into it because until you put your work out there, you're basically only screwing around is what I read on the internet somewhere. And so you are actually writing your own book.
I am.
But it's your husband's.
It's my husband's story. Mm. So it's kind of a hybrid memoir because most people, when they write a memoir, it's their story.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a funny, as a little aside, when I met my husband and we were married, he was 30. Now, today, that's young. I was 23. But when we were in California, they asked him what marriage it was, and they asked me for an ID. So when you're 30 and you hadn't been married, that was very unusual, but he hadn't been.
So they thought he was older, and you were too young.
At 30, they thought, gee, this has to be
his second marriage.
Second, or maybe more. Who knows?
Or maybe
but
more.
He's from East Tennessee, and he's one of 16 children. And I was always fascinated by his story. Mm. And I've never had, other than having him make tapes over the years, when he would drive to Tennessee, I'd have him bring a tape recorder and just go through the things that he remembered about his neighborhood and growing up.
And verbally record them.
So then finally when we went over a couple of years ago, and then when I retired, I had time to transcribe those and just get all the background and try to pull this together into his memoir. So what happened with him was, being one of this huge family, East Tennessee, Appalachia, he ran away from home at 13 and ended up selling hot dogs in New Orleans.
Wow.
And having his own little apartment at 13. So it was amazing. He looked 16. So he was little. He was mature, early bloomer in that regard. So it's been a challenge. Oh, I really have, for people like you that have been writing books, such respect. This is very different than journalism, where we have deadlines and we have to turn things out, and you kind of live with this gun to your head all the time.
Yes.
And now I'm kind of like, oh, this is really challenging.
Well, and you want to be accountable and hold yourself accountable, but you also want to be that accountability for your clients. So why is that so important to you? Because there are no deadlines?
Well, if I would have a deadline in terms of a client, and I can meet that quite easily. If I have a job to do, I feel like I have to get started.
But if they have no deadline,
well, then we'd have to work a deadline out. Otherwise, said I need that. I'm good at deadlines. So, but when I'm writing something on my own, it's so easy to get distracted. So I've joined a lot of meetups, which are available online, and people can Google meetups for almost anything, fishing, sailing, but writing. And there's some good local ones. And it's been, I've had time to meet a lot of people that are what I would call not journalists, but writers.
Yes.
In general, or authors. Some of them are already published. And so that's been really fun. And to sort of see what their processes are. And also what we do a lot of is workshopping. So you bring in a chapter or an excerpt of what you've done, and you share it, or you send it by email that week. And then when you meet with a meetup group, people give you a critique on what they think is working and what they think isn't.
Yeah, I'm afraid of the critique. And what did I read online? I read online, expect haters. Isn't that just in your face awful?
Well, I haven't found that. You do have to have a little bit of a thick skin, but I have a pretty thick skin from being in journalism all those years. I mean, I had to write about people getting arrested.
Yeah.
And you had to have a really thick skin when somebody calls you up and said, you ruined my life.
Oh.
I still hear from somebody who's since moved very far away, who he still sends me messages and says that I ruined his life by publishing his arrest.
Yeah, well, whatever. It's common knowledge.
It doesn't bother me, really. I mean, it was part of my job, and I actually enjoyed doing police news. It's very direct, and it's interesting. Mm. So I always kept that part of the job when I had reporters. And over the years, I usually did what we call the police beat, which was talking to the police every week and writing up the different incidents.
I was just going to say, the arrests are all on the police CB radios and stuff.
Yes.
And all. My aunt used to have one of those CB radios, and she would listen in the background constantly, nonstop, to what was happening.
Right. Oh, people love
like
it.
Oh my God, how do you... Like, I wouldn't be able to live my life knowing all those things were happening right in my backyard. But anyway, so I want to ask you this. How do we not worry? So if we have to expect the haters and, you know, stand in our value and just write and forget about worrying about what we're writing, just write, you know, as best we can, how do we not worry or about the how? How do we not worry about how we're going to get it done? Like, how are you not worrying?
Well, I'm worrying more about, I want mine to be commercially viable, which a lot, some people are just writing maybe for their families, if they do a memoir and they share it with all of their families. But so to me, it's really listening and trying to, I was never afraid because I didn't, to step back a little bit, when I walked into the newsroom, I had never taken a course in journalism. I had studied English and I had taught English.
Yeah.
But so I wanted to learn, and I really appreciated the city editors, the early editors I had. And when I worked for the Norwell Mariner, Judy Enright, still a great friend of mine, who really taught me a lot about how to structure stories and what's important. And I absorbed all of that. So when I go to these workshopping events, whether it's a meetup or there's an organization in Boston called Grub Street, which is a writing center, you will get that feedback, and they may say, I don't think this works. But then you'll come away with, how can I fix it? How can I make it work? It doesn't mean you throw it in the fire or the shredder. It just means it someone else who was just an unbiased reader is giving you feedback and letting you, and that's good information. You don't have to take it. You can still really believe in what you've put down.
Yeah, you don't have to take it.
But sometimes it's hard to take something that you work really hard on, like it might be a paragraph or a character or a quote, and then you have to get rid of it.
Yeah, get rid of it or let it go or what have you. But it really is important to understand who your reader is.
Yes, and if you want to have my book will be more of a general audience. Anyone from young, probably from anywhere from like middle school through adult, because it's a coming of age story. It takes it from a boy who then it ends when he's 18 and he's in the Air Force.
Isn't the reader somebody just like you? Because you are the writer, and you're really speaking to people from your heart, which is really a reflection of who you are. So kind of,
except it's more, I guess, because of the stories that I've written over the years, which were for an audience that might be 4,000 or 5,000 people getting the paper every week.
Yeah.
They're not all like me. So
no, but the book you're writing.
Right. But I would want it to be more accessible to almost anyone who has an interest in that kind of story.
Okay.
And
all right.
And like a To Kill a Mockingbird type story. I mean, it's a story about a youth that it's a time that's passed that nobody today would have done what he did and survived the way he did. So it's an interesting story to share and tell, and especially kids today when they're on their video games or they're not allowed. I was in one of my I walk every morning, and I was walking by this one house, and this little boy was waiting for the bus, and he was climbing on this big rock, and his mother came out and yelled at him, "Get off the rock, you know, you're going to get hurt." And I'm like, he's just climbing on a rock. He's a little kid. So what if he falls down and skins his knee before school? It's not the end of the world.
He needs to experience that.
Yes, exactly.
Right? All right. Well, we have to go to break. My guest is Mary Ford, and you can go to maryfordedit.com for more information on how you can enlist Mary for her services. And you're listening to Powerful Women Revealed right here on 95.9 WATD.
Hi, I'm Nicole Perry, and I created a great motivational tool for the entrepreneurial, spirited businesswoman called Powerful Women Reflections. Women entrepreneurs deserve to be at the top of our own priority lists, and these cards work similar to tarot cards by providing daily insight and motivation. Powerful Women Reflection cards are perfect to keep your health, business, and future in check. Each powerful deck come with 80 cards of reflection, and you can get your own personal deck today by visiting PowerfulWomenRevealed.com.
we are back here listening to Powerful Women Reveal. That was Capital City's Vowels. And oh my God, what a great song that is. I'm going to be like researching some more of their music because that was fantastic. I've been saving that song for a long time. It was perfect. And really, you don't need to have a psychic. Your editor does not need to be a psychic. And you don't need to feed anybody lines. You're just really helping guide them.
Exactly. Mentoring. I mean, I did that over the years for so many writers, reporters, contributors. I had columnists that would approach me about writing for the paper. And sometimes initially I would get their column and it was more, I'll give you a good example of a blog. Mm. And a blog is something, in my opinion, that did a lot of dot dots, a lot of stream of consciousness.
Yes.
They're very popular online. Mm-hmm. But in the paper, a column has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's written in complete sentences. It's not a stream of consciousness. So there was one gal who wanted to write about, she graduated, I think, in Hingham High in 1965, the good old days. And so the first one I got was just not publishable. But I talked to her and worked with her, and then she started writing these great columns all about things that I could definitely identify with. People love the oldies and what it was like back in her day.
I wrote that down, stream of consciousness. That was very cool.
Yes.
But really, you want to reach people real quick who are dreading editing and can't seem to edit their own work and want to enlist someone who actually has fun doing
it. Exactly. And people should not edit their own work. If you are going to send a letter, for example, to the editor, and you're mad about something, in the old days people would say sleep on it. Or if you were going to send a Dear John letter to your boyfriend you were breaking up with,
sleep on it.
But today no one is sleeping on anything, and we're just dashing it out, and then you can't pull it back.
So
there's another saying, they said, if you have yourself for an editor, then you have a fool for an editor. So people should always, even if it's just a spouse or a friend, say, take a look at this and tell me what you think. And have it be someone that isn't just going to tell you what you want to hear.
Yes,
sometimes
absolutely.
You need to hear the thing you don't want to hear and then step back and fix it.
The truth is, Kurt.
And also, writing, people need to know it's more of a craft. There are very talented writers out there, and we all know who they are, whether it's Stephen King or whoever you like to read. But you can learn how to be a good writer. Writing is a craft.
Just by reading. So I'm so afraid to read some other things, though, because I don't want other people's writing styles to sort of...
to invade your brain.
Yes! That's what I'm a little bit afraid of right now.
Yeah, but you have such a strong personality and style in your writing. I don't think you have to worry about that.
Don't have to worry about that.
No,
okay.
Just let it go.
What do you love the most about your Encore career? Because you traveled so much, and then you were a teacher, and then you were in the journaling and with the newspaper, and now you have the Encore career. What do you love about it?
Well, I love the opportunity now to have the time to meet new people and join new groups, whether it's meetups. I'm in several networks. I'm planning, I haven't done it yet, but as soon as I can figure out, I want to join Toastmasters. And I honed the skills of public speaking as an editor when I had to host different events, Citizens of the Year. And I don't want to lose that. I think you can lose confidence if you don't keep practicing
everything fresh
skills.
Perfect.
And so it's given me, and I just didn't have the time when I was working full time.
Okay, and now you see mistakes. This is going to go by fast. Like we have to wrap up very soon, but you see mistakes everywhere you go, on trucks and billboards.
Yes.
So if it was one thing you could say to inspire others, what would you say? Because those things drive you crazy, right?
Call me. Before you make a billboard.
Well, besides though, really to sleep on it? Is that your...
Sleep on it, but also take a little time. Have another set of eyes. Look, if you do have a question about a word, historical is a good example. Immigrate, look it up. There's a wonderful book. It's called Confusing Words, but it's by the Grammar Girl. If you just Google her. And it's great because it's very simple, and she gives you these little tips. Like, if you think of immigrate and emigrate, because right now we talk a lot about that. Think of the E as exit. So when you're leaving, it's emigrate. But when you're coming in, it's immigrate. So think of in with the I. So she gives you these little tips for
cute
these
little
confusing nice. Words so you don't make that. And people will think you're so smart.
Well, I mean, I would just look it up. Like, I have a dictionary on my app and a thesaurus and all of that. But now let me ask you, how can a perfectionist let go of their perfectionism and actually become a writer?
Well, that's tough. I'm definitely not a perfectionist.
Me neither.
So I think it's very hard to be a perfectionist in anything, whether it's whatever field you're in. It's very difficult. So I think they just have to work to kind of let go of that. Let another person in. Let someone else see it and say, hey, try this. And then just be open to that.
But I also think they need to look at the bigger picture. Because if you're focused on one minute little thing and you're trying to get these tiny little things perfect, just step back and look at the big picture of the project.
Right. And no one is going to lock you up for a comma splice or a misused word. And we all make mistakes. I still make mistakes.
Of
but
course.
It's good to have that extra set of eyes so you keep them to a minimum.
I did read, so I was printing a few extra little ditties here about what's going on online and what they're saying about writing with little tips. And one said, don't be lazy, do your best to avoid sounding stupid. Mm-hmm. So obviously, don't be lazy, but don't be perfect and, you know, just get the second set of eyes. You know, there's a lot of things you got to do. But I have this one that is driving me crazy. So this one says, what am I willing to sacrifice for my craft? What does that mean to you?
Well, I think it means to kind of shed the thick skin. I mean, and or shed the thin skin and get a thick skin. In other words, accept some criticism.
Oh.
A lot of people, and in my experience, especially dealing sometimes with new reporters, when they would write a feature story and I would come back with corrections or edits, it was very difficult. Like, it was personal.
Oh.
And you have to learn not to take it personally and realize that what's the point of your writing? Is
yeah.
it for you?
See, that's the big
picture.
If it's
just for you, fine. But if it's to really, if you want other people to learn from it, to read it for enjoyment, then you really need to open it up and not be so controlling and worry about every little thing.
Every
and
tiny
not
little
be
thing.
Open to change.
Yeah. Well, in the end, there will bound to be an error.
Of course.
Like, I had an error in my deck of cards. So warrior and worrier. There's another one.
Yeah.
I spelled that wrong and I didn't look it up.
Yeah.
But I'm leaving that mistake in there because
I think it's important. See if anyone else notices it.
Well, I think it's important.
They
might
think it's a play on words.
It is, kind of, if you think about it. Yeah. But we are out of time.
Well, this has been so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here today. Mary Ford, you can go to maryfordedit.com. It was my pleasure to have you here. I hope the listener will feel just as comfortable as I do to contact you and ask you for advice and hire you. So I want to leave you with this final quote by Theodore Roosevelt. Believe you can, and you're halfway there. Isn't that beautiful?
That is wonderful.
Thank you again for listening. I hope you will tune in next Sunday after the news at noon. Until then, I'm your host, Nicole Perry. You're listening. Well, have a great week. Remember, knowledge is power.